Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Hey, good morning there, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
Well, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Doing well, too.
I was on the way home last night, and I'd had a couple of scotches, and I remembered something that my dad taught me.
Don't drink too many scotches?
But if you do, you stop and get vanilla ice cream.
Uh-huh.
Because the old... Because
it tastes good?
The old wasn't a wives' tale, I guess it was an old Irish husband's tale, was that the feel bad the next day.
How'd that work out for you?
Total crock. But I remembered that my dad said that, and it made me want ice cream. And what's funny about when I was younger, my dad would sometimes get into trouble because my mother would wake up in the morning and there'd be vanilla ice cream in the freezer.
And she knew what it meant.
And she knew.
Too many scotches.
Because dad rarely would stop at, 11 o'clock at night on the way home and pick up ice cream unless there was a freezer. That didn't happen very often, but it did happen a couple of times. Anyway, so I'm walking home in Jersey City, and I'm walking by one of these 24-hour little marts, and I thought, Haagen-Dazs.
I bet they have vanilla ice cream.
They do. I know they do. They have Haagen-Dazs, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I like about Haagen-Dazs as a brand, Haagen-Dazs was started by a gentleman named Ruben Mattis.
Nobody named Haagen?
He's since passed away. Nobody named Haagen, but the ice cream was great. And had, if you look at the ingredients on Haagen-Dazs vanilla, and certainly before it was purchased by Pillsbury, when Ruben Mattis still owned it, it was pure. I mean, it was like the ingredients in vanilla ice cream were like cream, eggs, vanilla, sugar, you're done.
Breyer still has that, but they had a lot more air than...
And the quality of the ingredients at Haagen-Dazs is really, in commercial ice cream, unparalleled. And it's still very good.
I agree. There's no super mass-produced ice cream that I like better than Haagen-Dazs.
And the vanilla is still that way. But when Pillsbury bought it from Ruben Mattis, they made some changes that I wasn't so thrilled about. But they've done a remarkable job at keeping that brand valuable.
A super premium brand.
And keeping the quality of the product.
Mm-hmm.
Some things have started to happen that I sort of don't like. You'll notice that the chocolate chip ice cream is still chocolate chip, unless they're changing that too, that I don't know about. But they're running by some new flavors, and one of them was raspberry chip ice cream. And there are pictures of the raspberry chip on the container, and it looks like chocolate chips in raspberry. Except there's a reason they don't call it raspberry chocolate chip ice cream, because if you read the ingredients... One of the ingredients is chocolatey chips.
Chocolate-like?
Chocolatey chips, which means they're not chocolate chips. They're chocolatey chips. Why can't you just put chocolate in there?
Yeah, I mean, don't understand that. You're Haagen-Dazs. You're charging me $3 a pint.
You're charging me three and a quarter.
Right.
Put chocolate in my chocolate chips. Anyway, so it's bad for them. Bad for them, I say. But I still like Haagen-Dazs vanilla ice cream.
Did you get it and just test out the chocolatey chips?
I hadn't had a couple of scotches. No, I did. I brought it home. And I tried it out, and it was either blackberry chocolate chip or something like that. And neither flavor worked. The blackberry tasted kind of fake, although there was real blackberry in it. I read the ingredients. But so I didn't think the flavor worked, but the chocolatey chips didn't taste so bad, actually. But then what they had done was they substituted coconut oil for cocoa butter, it seems, from reading the ingredients of the chocolatey chips. But, don't call something mint chip and make it chocolatey chips in there. Put chocolate chips in there. Anyway, so there's my little... That's my little bitch of the day.
On the same order, though, one of the things that people have to look out for, and this has gotten a little bit of publicity lately, but whole wheat bread. Whole wheat bread is not necessarily whole wheat bread unless it says 100% whole wheat on the label. If it just says whole wheat bread, it may be some part whole wheat bread and some part not whole wheat bread.
Or multigrain.
Multigrain, right. Does not necessarily mean whole wheat.
Grain of anything.
It does not mean whole grain of anything.
Bunch of processed different pieces.
For it to be 100%, for you to know that it's a whole grain,
The whole bread. It needs to read 100% whole wheat bread.
Well, let's talk about happier things. In one of the things that you can do in any season of the year, but especially in summer, ice cream, you can make at home. And there are a bunch of great ice cream makers out there. Braun has one.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can find them in like the Harrington catalog. These things are awesome.
Yeah, for $100, I mean, you can get a nice ice cream maker.
And, you know, you're not turning the crank like we were when I was a kid, and you're not using the Mattel one either in the mm-hmm. plastic bucket where the motor burns out. And for you to be able to make homemade ice cream, actually the recipes often that you get with a lot of these ice cream makers are terrible. They're full of like stabilizers.
Mm-hmm. Which is the whole point. You don't need those stabilizers because you're making it to eat it that day. Problem is, once they go back into the freezer for 24 hours or even 12 hours, if they don't have the stabilizers in them, they get all crystalline and they get overly hard.
But so when you make the ice cream for yourself that day or for dessert that night, and with this thing, you can make a base.
Mm-hmm.
And these bases have a good shelf life in your refrigerator, or a good time that they'll be okay in your refrigerator because they have so much sugar as a preservative and because most ice cream bases are cooked to a certain extent. And you can find a lot of good recipes out there. And once you have a good base, you can then flavor the base with chocolate or what mm-hmm. I love to do and what Mark and I do in the restaurant all the time. When cherries come in, as they're in now, you take fresh cherries, you slice them up, you mash a few, you put them in there, and you make cherry ice cream that's fresh like that. It's absolutely amazing.
Spectacular. And we use whole vanilla beans, but you could use vanilla extract. There are lots of ways you can do this fairly easily.
And
it's really not that hard to do.
And the other thing that you can do if you're cooking at home is you can make savory ice creams that aren't as sweet as mm-hmm. maybe a child's ice cream. And it doesn't have to be just child flavors, you know. You can use all the different berries from the market. You can use savory flavors, honey flavors. And it's a way, if you're entertaining at home, to really wow your guests.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to a restaurant that makes their own ice cream, and if you're restaurateurs out there, you know the proper equipment to make your own ice cream, you can get some good stuff for about $6,000,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, a little bit much for the home ice cream maker. But, you know, they can spin some really interesting flavors of ice cream. And what you're seeing more and more on the high-end restaurant menus is you're seeing people using savory ice creams and sorbets as, you know, that means not sweet,
mm-hmm.
as a garnish. So you'll see, like, somebody makes a cold soup, and they'll throw in some, like, a basil sorbet.
I'll tell you, Chef did it.
Amazing.
Chef did it really. I have to say, I was a little trepidatious when uh-huh. when he brought this idea to me. He did a celeriac ice cream, which is celery root. I'm sorry, cold soup with peanut butter ice cream.
Yeah.
And it was delicious. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. It really was delicious and surprisingly delicious, the combinations that you can come up with. I think, though, the key there was the peanut butter ice cream wasn't too sweet.
It was
done more savory than sweet.
But on sweet ice creams, I saw on the drawing board as we left, there was a cherry ice cream because
mm-hmm.
the cherries are in season and it's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making a 20-year-old balsamic vinegar sorbet
mm-hmm.
and he's going to serve the cherry ice cream with a little dollop with a sorbet on top.
Nice.
And this is a great way for you to get creative at home and to express yourself, and it's really not that much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy one of these ice cream machines they have out there, very little trouble.
To make a watermelon sorbet is with one of these ice cream makers is literally a snap.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today, again, joining us is Antoinette Bruno from one of our favorite food-related websites. She's the editor-in-chief of StarChefs.com. Hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be back.
We asked you to come on to talk about a couple of things. What's out on StarChefs.com right now, or just about to come out, is... because we're cool restaurant people and we get all the advanced notices. But you talk a lot about pastry in the upcoming issue of Star Chefs, and I want to talk with so our audience knows what's coming up for the rest of the show. We're going to talk about sweet stuff. But one of the other things that I received a notice from you, that Mark and I received a notice from you on, was the Star Chefs inaugural International Chefs Congress.
Actually, you sent me a save the date, Antoinette, and whenever you send me a save the date, you know what I do?
What's that?
I save the date.
Yeah.
Good!
So talk to us. Now, this seems very interesting. It's a brand new event. It's called the International Chefs Congress. What's it all about?
It's my dream, actually.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago, I went to my first Chefs Congress abroad. Maybe it's 4 years ago. I went to a show in San Sebastian called Lo Mejor de la Gastronomía. And it's an incredible event. It's a 3 or 4 day event in San Sebastian, and you go and you stay in the mountains, and all these chefs from all over the world get together, and they share ideas and techniques. And it's absolutely a fantastic show. And I said to myself when I first went, we have got to do this in the United States. We absolutely, I mean, why don't we have something like this in the U.S.? And for the last couple of years, I've been putting together, you know, our Star Chef's own program. And then we found a space, and we've been negotiating with sponsors and you know, inviting chefs, and it all came together last year. And we picked the date for September 18th, 19th, and 20th in New York City. It's going to be held at Covenant House. And it is truly an opportunity for 1,500 chefs across this country to come together over these, you know, sort of three-night, two-day period and share concepts and techniques and ideas with 40 of the world's greatest chefs.
That's awesome. One of the things that, and there's been a little bit of stuff in the press now about chefs suing other chefs for stealing their recipes or their concepts or whatever, but that's not really the way our industry works. How our industry usually works is there's a ton of sharing. People are constantly taking inspiration and ideas and techniques from other people, and people are bringing new things to the fore, and everybody's sharing that information. Isn't that true, Antoinette?
That's what Star Chefs is all about. And I have a problem with any chef who says they don't want to share, and that's the first reason why we won't write about that chef. So this industry is all about sharing, and you have to be willing to put yourself out there and put your ideas out there and put your recipes out there so that somebody else can learn, and the industry as a whole moves forward. It gets to the next level.
You know, I think that when a couple of the chefs who've had a problem are sort of reluctantly looking at someone and saying, you know, I got a problem. You staged in my kitchen for 3 months, and then you went back to your restaurant, and four of my dishes are on your menu now, and you don't attribute me. And I think that's a legitimate problem. But as far as learning the technique and then employing it in your own career, that's what cooking is all about.
See, I don't even have a problem with four of the dishes moving to that restaurant because, you know, copying is the highest form of flattery.
You know, I'll tell you something else. Our partner, Lou Rivero, who is the third partner at both of our restaurants, who was a great guy, who if it weren't for him, we'd just be two young bartenders with an idea and no money and saying, we should have opened a restaurant 15 years ago. But Lou used to hang out with George Perrier, who is the chef, of course, at Le Bec Fan in Philadelphia. And, you know, Lou said many times he'd hang up, but people would come up with a recipe, and George Perrier, off the top of his head, would just give the person the recipe. And Lou said to George, he said, aren't you afraid that someone will copy your recipes? You're always just giving out your recipes. And Perrier supposedly is reported to have said to Lou Rivero, he said, Lou, if Picasso was here and you said, Picasso, will you teach me how to paint Guernica? And he tells you how to paint it. Do you think you could go home and paint it?
That's fabulous.
I got it. I absolutely got it.
And Antoinette, I want to tell you what I'm going to do with the profits from the restaurant this month.
What?
I'm going to give Francis French lessons.
I was going to say, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm going to the shore. So at the Chef's Conference, how will people share ideas? How's it going to be set up? What kinds of things will they have? Like, you know.
Well, this is really important. You know, having now been to, you know, I think a total of five of these big chef symposiums, from the one I mentioned, Lo Mayor, to another one that's held in Madrid called Madrid Fusion, and then there's yet another one in Barcelona called Alimentaria. You notice that all of those I mentioned are all in Spain, right?
Right.
Spain's the big gathering point for chefs these
right.
days.
Yes, yes.
So what we did is we took the best ideas from these shows, and then we altered them for exactly what you just asked me. So I had this conversation with Thomas Keller, and he went to Madrid Fusion this year, and he spent a lot of time with my partner, Will Blunt. And, you know, he said, you know, basically what was missing at Madrid Fusion was the time for Thomas to spend with Ferran. And, you know, Thomas got to spend a lot of time with the media people.
Right.
You know, there was all these scheduled events with the different journalists like myself.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't time scheduled for Thomas to hang out with Ferran or Pascal Barbeau or, you know, or Norman or whatever.
Actually, we're going to leave this on a cliffhanger so we're sure that everybody comes back after the break because we're going to have to break for a quick commercial. We'll be back with Antoinette Bruno talking about the International Chefs Congress that's going to happen in New York at the in the fall of this year. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis. Our guest today is our friend Antoinette Bruno. She's the editor-in-chief of StarChefs.com. And we're talking with her about an event that she's putting together, first of its kind in the United States, called the International Chefs Congress that will happen in New York City September 18th, 19th, and 20th. If you're in the business and you want to find out more about it, you can go to our website, RestaurantGuysRadio.com, and we'll get you some more information. Now, you were talking about how you've taken the best of the other International Chefs Congresses, most of which have happened in Madrid and Barcelona, and you've taken the best of them and also added some of your own twist to it. What exactly is going to happen at the American International Chefs Congress in September?
Perfect. So what we've done is we've basically cut a large part of the press out of it. This is a Congress for chefs. So there will be 750 attendees each day, and out of those 750 attendees, 700 of them will be chefs.
Right.
Okay, so that's the number one thing we've done. So we've limited, you know, whereas Madrid Fusion might have 600 attendees, 250 of them are press.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing we've done. We've limited the number of non-chefs in other ways that can participate. So, like, say somebody makes a range or they make a mixer. They're only allowed one ticket per person, and there's a maximum number of 50 tickets
right.
that can go to sort of people that other people in the industry. We want those people to participate because we want them to see what's going on, and we want them to take it back, those ideas, into their
sure.
designing of their products. But we want to limit, you know, how many of those people are actually at the Congress.
Okay, so when the chefs get there, how do they interact with each other? When a chef comes to this thing, what's he going to find or she going to find?
So there are these networking things set up over the whole 3 days. So on the very first day, there's a welcome reception, and the chefs have, you know, a literally scheduled time to network. Then there's a welcome dinner. There's more networking. Then there's an after party.
Uh-huh. So
okay?
This is basically...
I know a lot of chefs, Antoinette.
Mm-hmm.
All the networking is going to get done at the after party.
Yeah.
Okay, I know how this works.
And you know what's funny? I'm just envisioning Blue Ribbon at 2 o'clock in the morning for the after party.
After party. Oh, there'll be lots of those.
You know, we have to take a break, but we're going to come back after the news. We're talking with Antoinette Bruno, editor-in-chief of StarChefs.com, about the International Chefs Congress, which is happening in September in New York. Sounds like it's a pretty interesting and exciting and a first that we have in America. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today our guest is Antoinette Bruno. She is the CEO and the editor-in-chief of StarChefs.com. If you don't know about StarChefs.com, you can check it out. You can link to it through our website at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. It's really a food clearinghouse. It's designed for the industry and those in the industry, but if you're a foodie like so many people that listen to the show and you're not in the industry and you want the inside scoop on a bunch of stuff, it's a great site to go. There's a lot of editorial content. It's actually a place that people in the industry go. You can post a job listing or you can look for a job there. But the editorial content, it's a great online food magazine for those in the know. Now, Antoinette, we were talking about the International Chefs Congress, which Star Chefs is putting together in September, and I want to sort of wrap up our discussion on that because I want to talk about the next issue of Star Chefs, which is about to come out. If to the many chefs who listen or food professionals who listen or other food industry people who want to come, why don't you talk to us about how they can do that?
Perfect. Well, you can log on to Star Chefs at www.starchefs.com, and you'll see a button for the International Chefs Congress, and you click on it, and you can request an invitation. And remember, this is for chefs. So you can request an invitation, and then we'll review your application to attend because we really want this to be for chefs. We do accept some invitations from non-chefs. It's more expensive for a non-chef to come. It's $850 for a two-day pass for a non-chef, whereas a chef can attend for 1 or 2 days, and it's $225 a day. So we've taken all of our sponsorship dollars, and we've bought down the cost for a chef to attend.
So you're subsidizing chefs so they can attend this.
That's the idea.
And when these chefs come, they're going to get to talk to some of the top chefs in the world. Who is coming to this?
Some of the most amazing people. So from Chef Jose Andres in D.C., Ken Oranger in Boston, Susser Lee in Canada, Norman Van Aken from Miami, Pascal Barbeau from France. The pastry program is absolutely unbelievable.
You left a major guy out there, Antoinette.
Tony Bourdain.
You left one more major guy out.
Daniel Ballou, David Boulay.
One more.
Wiley Dufresne.
You got Mark all wrong. He's referring to our chef.
Anthony Bucco from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi. Come on.
I knew that was where he was going. Oh, you know what? All right, so let's turn the conversation now to pastry, which is what the next issue of Star Chef spends a lot of time talking about. What's happened in pastry that's different today than has been going on? Desserts in restaurants are different today than they were, and I think one of the most interesting things that's happened that you talk about is you're seeing more and more away from the traditional desserts. It's not just chocolate and sweet things. You're seeing savory flavors like herbs
totally.
And stuff in
biggest
desserts.
Trend.
Talk to us about that and how it's happening and who's behind it and what people are doing.
Perfect. Sweet versus savory is something that is just totally taken off. I mean, it started actually years ago in Europe, probably 15 years ago it started in Spain. There were definitely a few different chefs that were involved in the beginning of the trend. There's a chef called Jordi Bertrand from a restaurant called Espace Cray. He was sort of one of the most innovative chefs 15 years ago that started using savory and sweet together. And then you have the whole El Bulli alumni who have been using sweet and savory, from Oriel Boulanger to Carlos Abellon to Albert Adria, and they've really brought it sort of, full circle.
So those of you in the listening audience may not recognize some of these names. These are some of the top restaurants and top pastry chefs in the world. But, Antoinette,
totally.
Let's talk about – can you give us some examples of people using savory flavors in dessert, which you might
so
not have seen 20
years ago? Okay, so here I'll give you an example of a pastry chef right here in New York. So there's a restaurant in New York called Urania. And the pastry chef is Karen Stabinski. And she does this incredible savory dessert, which is avocados, saffron, tarragon, celery, artichoke, Earl Grey, rose hips, thyme, and iced lemongrass and black pepper.
And a partridge and a pear tree.
Doesn't sound like dessert.
It is so dessert.
Yeah.
The spice is just they're on your tongue, and it's so titillating. I mean, it's just incredible. It's incredible. Then there's Sam Mason, who's probably, sort of the person who's been most influential in the United States when it comes to savory versus sweet. I mean, I don't think anyone exemplifies it more than him. And he has just done some incredible desserts. I mean, I can describe one I love. We talked about before the strawberry dessert that I had, in Vegas. Sam did this dessert with local strawberries, Parmesan ice cream with an olive oil caramel.
You know, that's something that we're seeing a lot of, and we actually work with things often. A lot of people are making their own ice cream today. And we'll use savory ice creams, not sweet ice creams,
right,
as garnishes on our savory courses or savory sorbets in our, cold soups or whatever. But you're seeing people get really interesting and creative with savory flavors of ice cream and using them for dessert.
One of the things, though, Antoinette, that concerns me is when people go over the top with some of this stuff. Sometimes it just gets gross.
Yeah, I haven't found it over the top, not in the dessert area.
Come to Jersey.
It's a way to not have you want to finish a meal. Do you want to, like, feel like you've got a ton of bricks in your tummy when you walk out the door? Mm. And if you have a really heavy dessert, that's exactly how you feel.
Yeah, but, you know, I think what I find is when this goes wrong, and I like the idea of when people are incorporating savory ingredients into dessert and having a dessert that has a lot of savory flavors in it and having that for dessert. I really like that when it goes right. But, you know, as it percolates out into the rest of the industry, I find some people who – you need to be very careful with doing this. And I think people read magazines and may not have the expertise and then go and try to do it themselves. Sometimes I find desserts – that have, are based in a lot of herbs and savory things, people can go too far and it winds up smelling. I had a lavender dessert somewhere that will remain nameless. And it was like, you know, the dessert tasted like the inside of my grandmother's purse.
Yeah, perfume, no, that's terrible. Perfume bottle as opposed to a dessert.
Do you know what we're seeing out here that I'm wondering if you're seeing in the rest of the country? I've seen an article or two on it. And we're using it actually in our restaurant upstairs. We have a very hearty cocktail program that we've just started a couple of months ago. We're seeing dessert cocktails really to the fore. What are you seeing in that area?
Oh, definitely. All over the country. I mean, from edible cocktails, like Picheong did at Spice Market and will do in his new place called Pong that's going to be open in September. I've seen them all across the country.
So describe an edible cocktail.
Well, an edible cocktail is, I mean, Piche's, I guess, famous one is with tapioca pearls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a glass. It has fruit, it has these tapioca pearls, which are each made by fruit, and it has a straw in it, and the straw has like a little spoon at the end, and one literally eats the cocktail.
Yeah.
Will Goldfarb has some great edible cocktails at Room for Dessert in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely fantastic.
And we find that we recommend to people cocktails for dessert, and not even coming up with the edible cocktails, but we're very into retro cocktails. And so we'll have a Brandy Alexander, for example, that we use that is not necessarily very sweet, but it works it's a sweet thing that's sort of light and ends, again, not feeling like you've got a ton of bricks in your stomach. Or, you know, we use a Pink Lady that we've sort of modified to make our own grenadine, and we make our own ingredients that we turned a little on its head. But having a dessert cocktail, that's a very easy way, especially if you're at home, to have an easy production cocktail.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I'm seeing with cocktails, in the way you're speaking of them, not being edible but drinking, is I've seen cocktails being paired with desserts.
Mm-hmm.
So take that Brandy Alexander and pairing it literally with a dessert that has complementary flavors. I'm seeing wines paired with dessert, which is more traditional, but seeing cocktails paired, specialty coffees and teas paired, and people actually offering these whole dessert menus where you do a dessert tasting and it's three or four courses. They're small courses. They're lots of little, little tiny dishes, and they're literally each one is paired with a separate thing. Generally, there's a theme involved. Mm-hmm.
You know what, Antoinette? That's happening a lot at the dessert bars, and you mentioned a place called Room for Dessert. When we come back, I'd really like to talk about dessert bars, if you don't mind.
Fabulous.
All right. Well, our guest is Antoinette Bruno. She's the editor-in-chief of StarChefs.com. You can find out more about her, about the International Chefs Congress that's coming up, and about the items that we're talking about on our website, RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 9
973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. This is Mark Francis from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We're speaking with our friend Antoinette Bruno. She is the editor-in-chief of StarChefs.com, a national online magazine and publication aimed at the industry, but has a lot for you foodies out there to just go on, and there's a tremendous amount of editorial content there. We're talking about desserts, which is within the current issue of StarChefs. And right before the break, Mark and you, Antoinette, we're talking about the idea of a dessert bar and dessert courses and people going places just for dessert that you're seeing pop up in New York. Can you talk to us about that? And is that only happening in New York, or is that happening in other cities across the country?
Happening all across the country. The trend started back almost 10 years ago in Boston with a restaurant called Finale, which two Harvard MBAs started as a kind of like their thesis. They had to develop a business plan to graduate, and this was their concept. It took off. Slowly.
Hold on again. I'm gonna say that Italians have been doing this in Little Italy forever. We stop at a little pastry shop.
Yeah.
Have an espresso and a cannoli, and we're on our way.
But this is different than that.
I know.
This is dessert only in multiple courses. You know, it's in New York, the first real sort of dessert only restaurant was like Chickalicious. You know, and they opened up, I don't know, 5 years ago, I think it was. And then you had Room for Dessert come in. Which is Wilk Goldfarb.
That's so Room, the number four dessert. As the
Room
name of
for
that.
Dessert. Right. And I love it. It's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. You have Pi Cheong, who was the pastry chef at Spice Market in 66. He's opening a new dessert bar up this fall in September called Pong. It's going to be in the Village. Sam Mason, the pastry chef from WD-50, is now going out on his own and is opening up a dessert restaurant in Soho. That's not due to open up till early 2007.
What do you think has led to the advent of you didn't see any of these 7 years ago, and now you see them popping up all over. What do you think has changed that they're now you're seeing dessert bars, very serious dessert bars?
Well, I think people love dessert, and the concept is I mean, yeah, it's a little bit trendy, the idea of sitting down in a restaurant and having three or four courses of desserts. But once you've done it once, it's like it's a treat. It's like going out to the movies.
Yeah.
First of all, it's an inexpensive date too.
Yep.
You know, and if you want to take a date out to dinner these days, you got to drop $100, you know, at a minimum, right? You can go to a dessert bar. You
we
can
actually
spend
hope,
a lot less
we actually
money.
Hope more.
Yeah, if you're coming Stage Left, you're going to have to drop a little more than that. But,
but you know, it's literally like, you know, you can drop in, you can do Chickalicious. I think you can do a three-course dessert tasting. I think it's $15 or $18.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
If you want it paired, it's another, you know, $10 or $15. So you're talking, you know, sort of, you know, $20 to $30 per person. That's not bad for a date.
Well, I'm also a big fan of a lot of these places are open sort of late night, and I do like the idea, though. You know, one of the nice things about New Brunswick, New Jersey, is it's kind of a restaurant town. It's really become a restaurant town. It was in the midst of the urban malaise of the 70s. I mean, New Brunswick hit the same nadir as the other small northeast cities, and now it's come around. And one of the ways that it came around, I think, there's a lot of wise political leadership around here, is they encouraged early on sidewalk cafes and anything that would put people on the street, and they were very friendly to small businesses like restaurants.
And the later a well-meaning business stayed open, the happier they were.
Yeah, so one of the things that we have always had in our little town is people will come into town because, you know, we're a medium-sized city, but we serve the outlying suburbs. So people will either be in work and go to a restaurant or come in from out of town and maybe go to one bar and have a cocktail and then walk to, you know, and this is common in New York, but outside of a major city, it's not so common, and it's really nice. They'll go to another place for dinner, and then maybe people will say to us sometimes, you know, we're going to go have dessert around the corner.
Right.
And that's great, because I have as many people who come and have dessert with us, which is nice. It breaks up the evening, you know what
I mean? That's exactly what we're talking about. When you asked me about around the country, there's this place in L.A. called Gin Patisserie. Christy Chu's the pastry chef, and she has this garden. Basically, there's no indoors of the restaurant.
Wow.
Basically, the indoors is the kitchen, and they have a counter indoors. But if you want to sit down and eat, you got to sit down in the garden. And you can just stop in there. She only serves dessert.
Wow.
You can do a dessert with a tea pairing or, it's, and the place is decorated like a Japanese garden. It's so cool. But, you know, and it only rains in L.A. for 8 days a year. That's
I was
what
just
I'm
about
told.
To say, that doesn't work as well in New Brunswick. It works better in L.A.
It's not the Seattle. In Seattle, that wouldn't go over so big, I don't think.
But, you know, L.A.'s getting two more dessert-only restaurants coming up. Elizabeth Belkind has been the pastry chef at Grace for the last 5 years. She's going out on her own. Her new place is supposed to open up in September, and the whole restaurant's going to be, you know, it's not all dessert, but it's probably 85% dessert.
And what I love about beautiful, fashionable dessert bars in L.A. is where you can go and watch fashion models not eat dessert. It's beautiful. It's, you watch them push it around on the plate, and but you they can be seen. Me, I'm the pasty white Irish guy eating all the dessert. I'm always tempted to go with the fashion model and say, can I have that? Are you gonna finish that?
Because then I get 6 courses of dessert.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because Elizabeth Belkind is in my book, famous for donuts.
Uh-huh.
And I mean rich, fattening, absolutely decadent donuts. And she, at Grace, she used to have this donut night every Wednesday night. And you could go in there and she'd make, you know, a dozen new donuts every Wednesday night. And literally people didn't come in for dinner that night. You know, it was an industry night and everybody came in to get a dozen donuts. It's just fantastic. And so she's taking that concept of her Wednesday night donuts, and that's going to be one of the, you know, the focal points of her new restaurant.
I may steal that idea. Hey, listen, Antoinette, we need to run. I want to thank you for being on the show. You're great, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks
it's
a lot.
Great.
Thanks
for having me.
All right, take care. Antoinette Bruno, the website is starchefs.com. You can find out more about it in the International Chefs Conference that's coming up, or the inaugural International Chefs Conference that's coming up this fall in New York, and more about desserts in general on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest was Antoinette Bruno from starchefs.com. We were talking about a lot of things. One of the things we were talking about was dessert. One of my favorite.
Yeah, one of the things that's been integrated into a lot of desserts, and it's definitely an idea we're going to steal, like, and we talked about not afraid to steal ideas, is the whole donut has really made a resurgence into desserts in certainly in the Northeast, and according to Antoinette, you know, L.A. and other places around the country. Donuts have come back into great desserts. I mean, I remember we went to Philidia and had an awesome donut kind of frothed cream dessert that was really spectacular.
And it all started with Thomas Keller, mm-hmm. who at the French Laundry years ago had a dessert that was cappuccino and donuts, which mm-hmm. was not really just cappuccino and donuts. It was a cappuccino semifreddo that he made with a donut that he would fry you a donut to order. I mean, a beautiful, beautiful donut. And he gave you a little donut and the donut hole. You got that too.
Yeah, one of the things, though, you got to avoid when you go to a restaurant like that is make sure they're not frying the calamari in the same oil as the donut.
Because the calamari donut's not one of
the... calamari... Octopus donuts, no good.
I got a funny story for you.
Go ahead, you have one.
You know I love my
this
dad.
This would be something different for me, then.
You know I love my dad, and he is the influence on my life.
Yes.
He's the main... He's taught me everything in it. Him and my mom have taught me everything in it. But my dad wasn't so good with the, like, whole knowing the nutrition thing. By the way, he's made it to 83, and he's doing fine, so he knew something. But my dad was not so much on the green vegetables, and he, you know, made us eat our green vegetables, but he didn't really. But we would go down to the shore in the summertime, and for breakfast we'd go to the bakery, and we would get rolls and donuts. And my dad had been grained that you don't get your sweet stuff until you had the your savory stuff. And so I remember he would say, "Now you can't have a donut until you eat your roll."
So slather me a buttered roll and then bring on the donut.
Because you can't have dessert unless you have your slathered buttered roll. It wasn't like he was telling me to eat my eggs or I couldn't have my donut.
Did you tell him you were going to put some broccoli in between there and make little
No. It was all just sticky buns and rolls. But I'll always remember, and my sister, he calls my youngest sister Francine Honey Girl, and he say, "Honey Girl, you can't have your donut until you eat your roll." Dad, you were wrong on that one. I'm sorry if you're listening. So I hope you enjoy the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.